So you mentioned Jim Cullum a moment ago. How did he have an idea to get the jazz band on the radio? Let's do the Riverwalk story. I mean, I want to know how that happened.
Yeah. It's a good story. I'd had that initial talk with Jim, and I had told him I was interested in pursuing the idea, but we had to get KSTX on the air first, and then we could talk at some future point. So we'd had that talk, and I think I must have encountered him a time or two or more after that, when one day I got a call from Jim, and he said, I want you to listen to this message that somebody left on my phone answering machine. He said, I don't know whether to believe this or not, but you listen to it. So he played it for me. And it was a man who identified himself and said, I saw the band at Carnegie Hall. This was in about 1989, 90 maybe. I saw the band at Carnegie Hall, and I want to help you get a bigger audience for what you do. Call me, and here's the number. And I listened to it. It sounded earnest, and, you know, it wasn't anything I heard that sounded like he was crazy. And so I told Jim, that sounds like something you should follow up on. And so he said, I will. And sometime later, within a few days at most, Jim, called me again and said, I think this guy's for real. And he says that he has money, and he's willing to come down here and have a visit and talk about what he could help us do to get a bigger audience for the band. And don't you think this might be a way that we could possibly get the band back on the radio? I said, yeah, it sounds like an opportunity knocking to me. So Jim invited, I think I still have to honor his wish to be anonymous.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Invited X to come visit, and I'd like you to have lunch with us, and let's talk with him. And I, of course, had a pretty big credential because I had worked at NPR for so many years. And NPR was more in those days than just a news and information service. We were producing music programs, including fair amount of jazz.
Yeah, yeah.
So NPR was known in New York City. And
was that where this fellow was based?
Yes.
So, Dr. Jazz, as we...
Yeah, yeah. That was the Dr. Jazz.
Yeah.
So I had that to bring to the table, my experience and my background. And we had a very pleasant lunch when Dr. Jazz got here. And I described how NPR worked and how sources of programs that were not in the NPR corporate organization could distribute their programs through the national NPR's National Program Service. I described that, and I'm pretty sure Jim described a program that would be very friendly to the legends of jazz, classic American jazz. And Dr. Jazz liked what he heard, and it turned out that he did have a lot of money.
Was he a medical doctor?
Yes. And he had a very, very strong interest in preserving classic American jazz, as it turned out.
Pre-World War II sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Principally. And so that's where the money came from. And as I would say to various interest groups ever afterward, these opportunities almost never land on your doorstep. There was enough money available for us to launch the program and demonstrate what it could be. In time to attract money from other sources to support the ongoing production of the program after Dr. Jazz's initial support had come to its end. He never went entirely away, by the way. Continued to be a financial contributor for many years. So that's the... That's not quite all the story. The rest of the story about that was that Jim had a friend who had been, I guess, the producer of the band on radio in its earlier days, that he invited to come talk to us about producing something suitable for public radio. That did not work out, as it turned out. And I was thinking at the time, we need somebody like Margaret Pick, who has the kind of experience that Margaret has in producing radio.
Now, what had she been doing?
Margaret Pick was an independent producer at the time, but her primary experience as a radio producer had been with Garrison Keillor and a Prairie Home Companion. And she had been the producer of that program for a number of years and then left the program, left Minnesota, went to California.
Tough choice.
Lived in Petaluma.
Paradise.
Yeah, next to the Napa Valley. So I said, we need somebody like Margaret Pick. And I knew some people that we could talk to. The people who produced Mountain Stage, which was based in West Virginia, came to San Antonio for some reason. I don't remember what exactly, but we talked with them about their experience and who they might recommend as possibilities as producer. And by coincidence, and this sounds too coincidental to be true, but I believe it is true. I think I'm not making this up. Jim, one of Jim's agents, or maybe his agent at the time, it turned out, was also Margaret Pick's agent. And as improbable as that seems, we got in touch with Margaret herself not just somebody like Margaret,
mm-hmm.
and asked if she had any interest. And she was interested enough at least to come to San Antonio and to meet Jim and visit the band. And they were still in, they were in the landing at the time every night. Well, not every night. I guess they took Sunday night off. But at any rate, Margaret stayed for three or four days assessing the situation. And she said, I would like to be your producer. And that's how the connection with Margaret came to pass. And she had a lot to do right there in lockstep with Jim on developing what the hour-long jazz program was going to be. It was going to celebrate American jazz, and it was going to celebrate the people who made American jazz while they were still living.
And through storytelling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Scripted, really tightly scripted. And made it work. And it, welcome home.
How are you?
And that was the happy, almost unbelievable set of circumstances, the initial call from Dr. Jazz and his delivering on what he said he could do, and the association of Margaret with the band in producing the radio series. You couldn't have written that any better.
Yeah.
you would say, if it had been made up, oh, that would never happen.
Yeah.
It did happen.
To this day, anytime, you know, we go through the mall and Renata sees, you know, sees candies somewhere, she we read it in your voice. Because of the underwriting credits for so many years, because you talked about the additional support after, yes. Dr. Jazz.
That's
so
right.
I hear, every time I think of C's Candies, I hear it in your voice.
C's Candies.
That's right. Exactly. Was David Holt a part of it from the beginning, too, as the kind of narrator host or something?
Very close to the beginning, if not the first program. I think, no, not the first program. That was Groucho Marx's announcer.
Really? The dude from, like, You Bet Your Life announcer?
Yeah.
Wow. I don't recall his name either, but...
He hosted... we did the first three programs were distributed, promoted and distributed as holiday specials.
Mm-hmm.
I know it was July 4th and Labor Day. I guess Memorial Day maybe was the third one. But George Fenneman?
Maybe, yeah.
I think that was his name.
Yeah.
And he was well known, and that helped get some attention from the stations, because we offered these programs as live broadcast specials, and the name announcer, and I forget now, Doc Cheatham, I think, was the featured guest on one of those. And I think Odetta was a featured guest, mm-hmm. on one of those three specials. We were looking for headliners.
Yeah.
And the broadcasts were live from the landing. We had a truck parked in parking lot across the street, across the river from the landing, with a satellite dish on top of it. That was quite a scramble to make that live broadcast happen from downtown.
Yeah, that must have taken so much precision and in order to, you know, have it, because you talked about it being tightly scripted, about it, the performances that have to come off, about the, you know, the technical things that have to happen.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Downtown, just to add to that, downtown was pretty torn up by the tri-party project. This had to do with the paving and creating new lanes of traffic. And I don't know what all, but it was a mess. Mm. And we had to get the satellite truck onto that parking lot. And we also had to get a truck that was going to serve as the control room. An outfit out of Austin came down with a, it wasn't an 18-wheeler, I guess it was a, whatever is the last iteration before you get to 18. But we had to park that next to the Hyatt Regency Hotel where the landing was located. And we had a hard time getting permits for those trucks because of the construction downtown. Had some sleepless nights worrying about what it was going to take to get those permits.